This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Now on Food FM, you're listening to Bread and Butter with Caroline Kenyon. Caroline and her guests make sense of the world through food, from politics to farming, making and cooking.
Online, on smart speakers and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
Hello, it's my great pleasure to welcome to Bread and Butter today. It's actually a really stormy and miserable day. To welcome Finn Lagoon. I hope I've correctly pronounced your name, Finn. But Finn is involved with something that is very comforting and lovely. Finn, tell us what that is and who you are, because I know that our listeners are waiting to hear.
So good morning, Caroline. Thank you for having me. Buongiorno, I should say. So I'm one of the co-founders of Pasta Evangelists, which as of last year is the UK's biggest pasta brand, which is very exciting. And as you say, it's a very miserable day today. So hopefully, vicariously through fresh pasta, I can whisk you away to happier, sunnier Italy.
Absolutely. And, you know, if pasta is not a comfort food, I don't know what is. It's just what we need in this miserable weather. So tell me about you, Finn. Do you come from a foodie background? Do you have one of these kind of famous, wonderful nonnas who brought you up to cook with her?
So I don't have a nonna because I'm actually originally from Newcastle. My family's Polish, so it's quite strange that I'm doing an Italian food brand. But I've certainly grown up with a childhood that was all about food. My dad's a restaurateur. He's an independent restaurateur in Newcastle, and he has been for the last 30 years. So I grew up in restaurants. I grew up around chefs, menus, hospitality, customers. And, you know, I remember formative experience for me was running around my dad's restaurant as a, you know, a toddler, lighting tea lights, not very health and safety in 2023, but lighting tea lights on all of the tables. That was my job. And I loved it. So it makes me so happy to be working in food.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. I fell into the world of food by chance, by geography, because I moved out of London to Lincolnshire, which is this great food producing area. And that was just like one of the, apart from meeting my husband, one of the best things that ever happened to me. So in a way, I'm kind of envious of you that you have it, you know, running in your veins. And I mean, was food something that your family just lived and breathed, I imagine?
I mean, yes. I was always there at the table. So my dad grew up on a council estate in Newcastle. He's a very blustery, slightly mad, Geordie entrepreneur. But, you know, he would be juxtaposed with sort of Newcastle's top lawyers, doctors and so on, professionals who would come into the restaurant and dine. And, you know, I would always sit and have dinner with them. And I remember this one wine merchant who came into the restaurant for dinner one day. He must have been about 30 stone, loved food, loved gastronomy, loved wine. And I remember him saying to me, "Finn, whenever you eat steak, you must chew every piece 100 times. And to this day, I still chew every piece of steak 100 times. So that was the sort of world I was growing up in, around these people who loved food, loved wine, and it's just infectious. And I get very emotional about food. I can be very passionate about food. It's one of the few things that makes me cry, which is a bit strange, but sometimes it's made me cry. So it's hugely important to me, and it's always been there growing up.
I love that. I love everything. And there's lots I want to kind of tease out from there. So the first thing is, I love the way you described your father as this kind of big, blustery entrepreneur. Clearly, the entrepreneurial gene has been inherited by his son. So tell me, there you are at 3 years old, wielding a dangerous box of matches, lighting the tea lights. So what happens to little Finn when he's finished his sort of conventional education? Did he go straight into the world of food? What happened then?
I didn't. The food stumbling was somehow serendipitous. So I actually started, you know, I graduated, I went on a graduate scheme, and I absolutely hated it. It was a graduate scheme in retail kind of management. And I was in this soulless office in Watford. And I just thought, is this what work is? You know, is this going to be the rest of my life? And I just thought, I feel so sad. It really just can't be. And I remember I quit that job after about 3 weeks. I had my mum on the phone screaming at me down from Newcastle. And I was saying, Mum, as we say in Newcastle, Mum, it'll be all right. I'm in London. I'll find something different, you know. And I actually started very weirdly working at a German startup, which was a technology startup doing laundry and dry cleaning. So very strange, very different from food.
Niche.
But quite niche, but it was basically the Uber for laundry. So you could order a driver to come collect your laundry, dry cleaning, do it, and then return it in 24 hours. And I did that for 2 years, which was a hell of a lot longer than the 3 weeks I'd managed in the previous role. I loved the startup feeling about a business brand new, starting out. No one really knows what's happening. It's on your shoulders to grow it, whether you succeed or not. There's not, you know, tens of thousands of other people to make a success of it. It's you. And after I left there, I took a little break. I was trying to figure out what to do really with my life. And I met Alessandro, who's my co-founder, along with Chris Reynoldson. And Alex had, you know, this idea for this fresh pasta concept. And I joined those guys, and we were in a basement in West London setting up the business. it makes me smile now, but we were literally in the basement of someone's house, no Wi-Fi, huddled around Chris's phone on hotspot. And that's how we set up the business.
It takes one to know one. I'm also a sort of a serial entrepreneur, but I will say not on your, I'm going to say not on your scale. One of the things that I've started is a global food photography awards, which has entries from 100 countries, but we haven't done it as fast as you. So it's taken us 13 years. Now you've done the Pastor Evangelista journey in 7. Is that correct?
7 years, indeed.
That is amazing. And you've been through a pandemic. So talk me through that one. So tell me, there's three musketeers. So there's you three guys.
Yes.
Do you have your very distinct areas? Do you overlap? Do you trip over each other's feet, or have you divided it all up so you all know what you're doing?
I would say it's kind of an organized chaos based on our personalities, because we're very, very different. It's the first thing anyone will say, you guys are so different. And it is a motley crew, but it works. We really respect each other. We all bring something different. Alessandro is kind of the business development, the schmooze, you can say. He's happy to meet everyone. He's great at networking. You'll, you know, have 6 coffees a day, meeting people, trying to grow the business, finding ways. You know, he's very, very entrepreneurial. Chris is the brain of the business. He's an extremely, extremely clever guy. Numbers, data, strategy. And then I like to think of myself as the creative, cheeky Geordie. So we all bring something a little bit different.
Yeah, no, it sounds very, very complimentary. Absolutely. So really, to put you on the spot, what's special about Pastor Evangelista?
I mean, it's freshness at the heart of the business. You know, what's interesting is when we set out 7 years ago, we said we want to be the authority in fresh pasta. That was the company mission, the authority in fresh pasta. And a hell of a lot have changed in those 7 years. We've gotten much better at improving our slide decks and technology and our website. But that sentence has never changed. We want to be the authority in fresh pasta. All of our products are freshly made, you know, artisanal traditions that have existed in the Italian peninsula for centuries. So everything we do has freshness at its core, and that's what's integral to Pastor Evangelist.
Yeah. So tell me, there you were hotspotting off your phone in a kind of kitchen. Was it a basement kitchen, did you say?
It was just a basement. And
basement.
Yeah.
So how did you get your first customers? How did you blag your way into that?
So Pastor Evangelist started out as a direct-to-consumer e-commerce business. So we set up pastorevangelist.com, and we were delivering little boxes of fresh pasta, fresh sauces. And the idea was the customer could prepare, you know, a restaurant quality fresh pasta experience at home in a few minutes. Boiling fresh pasta, 2 minutes, warming up a sauce, combinare, as they say in Italian, combine, and then you have your finished dish. So we just started selling online. We started, we could say, encouraging, I would say, strongly forcing our friends and family to buy our first kits. So they became our first customers. And then, yeah, we started selling online through partnerships, trying to find new customers without much budget. To be honest, we didn't have a big marketing budget. And I think the watershed moment for us where the business started quickly gaining momentum was we went on Dragon's Den in 2018. We filmed it in May 2018 and it aired in August 2018. And I remember the night it aired, I was sitting with my laptop with all my friends and a glass of wine, and I was watching the traffic to our Pastor Evangelist website increasing whilst Dragon's Den aired. And that late August 2018, the business completely changed in one night.
That is incredible. Your heart must have been pounding.
It's bizarre. The hardest thing for me is you see yourself on TV and you think, do I really look like that? That was the worst bit.
Yeah. Well, I know you have to park your vanity, I'm afraid. And you have to think about the end goal. What's it all for? And not worry about whether, your hair looked funny or my voice sound squeaky?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite galling because, aside from worrying about that, they were very, very, very cruel to us. The dragons certainly breathed fire on us that day in front of, 4 million people watching it across the country. I was 24 years old and they said some pretty brutal things to myself and Alex when we were on the program. But
do you think they were right?
No, to be honest,
no element of being... Of truthfulness in what they said. They got it all wrong.
Well, Deborah Meaden very kindly said the pasta was delicious. On that, I agree with her. But I think, they said we were delusional. They said we were disastrous. And they called us Pasta La Disaster. So to be honest, it's hard to agree with that. I mean, this was in 2018. It's 5 years later. We've sold the business. We've just finished building a pasta factory in West London, a huge investment, which is really exciting. So I can't agree with them, unfortunately.
No, I would say fortunately and well done you. But, I think that's always the thing. It's like the dancing with the devil when you go on television, because part of it is that the people involved want to make good television. And for that, they want drama and confrontation. And it's not always about the truth.
I think that's right. And, I think it's symptomatic of also, in the last 5 years as a country, as a collective society and mentality, we've also come a long way in terms of, thinking twice about what we say to people. As I said, I was 24 years old. That's quite a hard thing to be told, that you're a disaster, that you're delusional on national television. And I think people are more aware of, making that sort of remark now, because that's a big thing to say to someone, especially a young person.
I do remember it myself. I co-wrote a book of interviews when I was 24, and there was a very, very harsh review of the book in the Sunday Times, actually by a woman journalist who's I think she thought that I and my co-writer were coming on her patch.
Right.
And it was really vicious. But what I remember is walking into my flat and the phone was ringing. It's before the internet. Mm-hmm. And it was a friend of mine who's in TV, and he said, "Oh, congratulations, you've got third of a page in the Sunday Times." And it was really instructive to me, Finn, because he didn't hear the detail, or didn't see the detail, the meanness, the spitefulness in it. He just thought, wow, coverage.
Absolutely.
So whenever I have friends who've been through what you've been through, I just say, other people wouldn't have noticed. They go, "Oh, wow, just Finn was on telly. Amazing."
Well, that's how we saw it. I remember standing there in that TV studio when they were saying this to me, and I thought, you can either cry or you can laugh. And I just tried to see the funny side of it, because as you say, the bigger picture is what an amazing piece of press, basically, and publicity for your nascent business. And of course, you've got to pay a lot of money if you want to advertise to 4 million people. We had that opportunity to address the nation, as it were, for free. So although they said some nasty things about us as entrepreneurs, they were at least very complimentary about the food. And that was the salient point.
Exactly. So you've mentioned, Finn, about the business being sold. Now, that's quite a big thing to have slipped into the conversation. So tell me one, how that happened, and then two, how that feels emotionally, because your business is your baby, isn't it? So let's start at the story of how it all happened.
So Pasture Advantage was acquired by Barilla Group, which is the, for listeners, it's the world's biggest pasta company. It's a Italian family-owned business headquartered in Parma, the beautiful city of Parma, where prosciutto comes from and Parmesan comes from. So you can imagine how much I enjoy going there and visiting. And we've been in touch with Barilla basically since the business began. We kept in contact really all the way from 2017, 2018. We would meet people from Barilla regularly every 6 months, every year, you know, keep them abreast of how the business was going. And then
how did you make the initial contact, Finn? Because there must be approached by lots of new pasta brands.
So Alessandro did, as I mentioned, he's the networker of the century, as far as I'm concerned. He knows everyone. He's really he loves meeting new people and talking and exchanging details and updating people. But I met them with them as well from early days, and we literally just kept them informed about the business. Every 6 months, sending business updates. We went and met them in Parma several times. And then, at the end of 2020, we entered conversations about Barilla acquiring a majority stake in Pasture Evangelist. We went out to Parma several times, and it was very, very funny, you know, in COVID, trying to do these face-to-face, quite intense conversations around an acquisition, and trying to do this with almost a Vladimir Putin-style 20-meter table between you and your partners is quite challenging. And then, Barilla officially acquired the business in January 2021. And, you know, I think you hinted at it, you know, Pasture Evangelist is my baby. It's Alessandra's baby and it's Chris's baby. I'm not just saying this to be pleasant about Barilla, but I could not have wished for a better partner for Pasture Evangelist. Barilla completely understand what we're doing spiritually, philosophically as a business, in terms of freshness, artisanality, premiumness, great food, gastronomy. They really get that and they back it. A lot of people, you know, speak to me and it feels like they assume that Barilla would want to, you know, acquire the business and then change the business. I would say it's actually been the complete opposite. Barilla likes what we're doing and therefore wanted to acquire the business and let us get on with it. So they're incredibly helpful and supportive of us, but the business hasn't changed in terms of how we run it, myself, Alex and Chris, or what we're trying to achieve.
That's really wonderful. And dare I say it, very unusual, Fen. You know, I'm a great believer in family businesses. You know, my other business is a family business, and we work with a lot of corporate partners who are global brands, and nearly all of them are family businesses. There's something special about the values of a family business. And it's totally different from something that's owned by private equity.
Absolutely. And I mean, we know the Barilla family. So when we visit in Parma, we are literally meeting Mr. Barilla, and we'll sit down together. We'll take food, Pasture Evangelist dishes, our products, and we eat them together. It's a very, you know, it's strange doing business in Italy because it's different to the UK. It is more relaxed. It can be more convivial. So it's always a pleasure for us.
Yeah, that's how I try and do business here, I must say. And I always want to give people delicious food, because otherwise, why would I be involved in the world of food? Apart from anything, I love eating. So I should think they're delighted to see you coming, bringing, you know, your delicious food. And they think, oh, they look in the diary for the week and they say, oh, the chaps from Pasture Evangelist are coming over. That's a nice week.
Yes, we were actually there 2 weeks ago presenting some of the new products we've been making in our pasty feature, which I know we'll come on to. And they were so supportive and they really, really so complimentary about our food. And I think what's lovely is, and it's a little bit lost on me, and I think it's perhaps a little bit lost on, you know, people in the UK, but Barilla in Italy is synonymous with pasta. Barilla is a huge, you know, institution and Italian icon, you know, a bit like Vespa or Ferrari for the Italian people. So for us to receive such kind words from the Barilla family about our pasta and our sauces, it's a real compliment.
It's a huge honour, and it makes one feel quite humble, really, to think that people who've built such an incredible business and global brand, that they really respect what you're doing, and they want to lend their name. That is something.
Yeah.
So Congratulations. So let's talk a little bit about the factory, because I was lucky enough to come to the opening, and I don't know whether it's sad or not, but I love food factories. I love going around them and find it really interesting. So I loved it, and everything was gleaming and new and shiny, and I can see exactly what you're doing. The smells were delicious. So that must have been a big project to develop.
I mean, an absolutely huge project. So it took about a year to build. As you saw, Caroline, it's a very big premises, a very big facility. You know, we've had to, you know, none of us have a mechanical background or any experience in building factories. So first we had to build a team. So we have a gentleman called Bhupendra, who's our chief operating officer, who knows this world inside and out. We couldn't have done it without him and the team that he's built at Pastry Vangers. And then we've also had a lot of support from Barilla, because again, they will help us where we need help and where we have no experience. So they helped us build it. And I think what's cool is we actually had a time-lapse camera filming the factory being built literally from mud. It was literally mud, a site of mud. And then over the course of a year, the factory had been built from the ground into the premises that you saw a couple of weeks ago. So we'll release this video shortly. We're editing it now, but it's amazing to watch how something like that has come to life in the space of a year.
It is incredible. And of course, what it leads on for me to ask you, Finn, is this just the first? Are you imagining, do you have global ambitions?
We certainly have global ambitions. I think for now, we don't have any ambitions to open another pasty feed shop. So the facility we've just finished building can produce, 50 tons of pasta a week. It's a hell of a lot of pasta. I believe it's the same weight as a humpback whale. So we've got a lot of pasta to sell, essentially, to make good on this large investment that we've committed to.
No, completely understood. So, I mean, one of the things that I always find fascinating, and again, it's a bit nerdy, but it's something that we all started being aware of during the pandemic and then with the war in Ukraine, is supply chains and climate change. I think we have to talk about, because I know that, I mean, your pasta is made with, it's 00 flour, isn't it? How do you see the future going in terms of protecting your supply chains, Finn? And I know that there's been an impact on the production levels of olive oil this year. How do you see yourselves navigating all of that?
I mean, you're right. It's a very difficult operating environment at the moment. Also after Brexit, which has complicated, obviously, a lot of, import regimens and also hiring. I think, we're quite lucky in the sense that we've, got long-term contracts essentially for key products that we need in the business. I think also another big blessing for us is, again, being integrated into Barilla, which is, a 3-4 billion global food company. So there's a huge amount of experience that we can lean on there. We don't need to solve problems around how we tackle, import and tariffs and duties and olive oil running out, because we now fortunately have access to Barilla's skill on that, and we get a lot of support from them.
That's fantastic. It makes a huge difference. As you say, they're kind of, their heft, their might is very supportive, isn't it? And to be a small business tackling these issues is very challenging.
That's right. I mean, even when we were purchasing tomatoes recently, for the huge brat pans to prepare our tomato sauces. I look after the more marketing creative side of the business. So I'm not super clued up on all of our supply points, but even there, Barilla was able to say, these are the people you should contact. These are the people you should reach out to. We can introduce you. And it really helps.
Yeah, I absolutely see that. So if I could wave a magic wand for you, Finn, because we're coming towards the end of our lovely conversation, where would you like to see Pasta Evangelista in 5 years' time, 10 years' time? What would your dream be?
Great question. I mean, I think what we're working on now, we're very, very focused. The biggest part of Pasta Evangelista today is our takeaway business. So 70% of orders at Pasta Evangelista are hot deliveries. So we're not in Lincolnshire yet, unfortunately, but where I am in Hackney in London today, I can go on pastryvangers.com in 1 hour, when it'll be 11 a.m., our kitchen opens and I can order a delicious fresh pasta takeaway. Perhaps I'll have pappardelle with wild boar ragout. That's what I'm in the mood for today. Our chefs in the kitchen will prepare it and deliver it in about 15 minutes to me directly. So it's a restaurant at home experience. Now, for the last 2 years, we've been opening these kitchens underground, literally underground, subterranean, dark kitchens, i.e. there's no customer-facing concept. You can only order digitally. We want to change that. I want to change that. I want customers to be able to walk along the street in, you know, I'll use again Hackney, for example, on Lower Clapton Road or Broadway Market, beautiful streets. And I want them to be able to see Pastor Evangelist in their community and come in. Because there's something, you know, I used the word convivial earlier about Italy and Italians. We want people to come into our space and meet with us and, you know, not just eat and smell delicious food, but listen to Italian music, sit down, you know, enjoy an Italian newspaper or Vogue Italia whilst they wait for their food. So to answer your question, in 5 years' time, I would like to see lots and lots of units all over the UK and beyond. So Pastor Evangelist will essentially be on the high street, but not as a restaurant or a QSR. The concept's quite different. So that I'm very excited about. So if I could wave my magic wand, I'd be in every major city of the UK tomorrow, ideally, with this concept.
I love that. I think that's a wonderful note to end on. I love the evocation of Italy that you've given me. It's one of my favourite places in the world, where I went on my honeymoon. It's where I've studied. And who just doesn't love that kind of warmth, that garlicky olive oil smell that you get from walking into a good Italian eatery? So here's to that, Finn. I salute what you and your colleagues have done and what you're doing. I think it's remarkable. You've done it fast. You've done it with style. And I can just see that you're going to rocket ahead. So well done and good luck.
Thank you so much, Caroline. Grazie.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Bread and Butter with Caroline Kenyon.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.